Today's episode of the Ringer NBA Show is brought to you by Google G Suite. G Suite by Google Cloud is a suite of cloud-based productivity tools that includes Gmail, Docs, Slides, Sheets, and Drive. You can make real-time updates to the same document without having to keep track of multiple versions. And since all the tools are cloud-based, your whole team can access the same document and work on the same page at the same time. Make it with G Suite by Google Cloud. To find out more, visit gsuite.com.
Basketball is very good. Anthony Davis will win the MVP this year. The Hawks trading Doncic was a smart move. What if the Cavs are better without LeBron? Basketball is very good.
Hello, and welcome to the Ringer NBA Show. This is Group Chat. I am Chris Ryan, and I am joined today by Justin Verrier.
Hello.
Paolo Ughetti.
What's up?
Haley O'Shaughnessy has been suspended for calling me a bitch. So she will not be on today's show. No, Haley's... Haley's on the injured reserve today.
She's on the jump. I think that's what you're
about. She's on the jump. So Haley is injured today. She'll be off. What are we going to talk about today? Well, what aren't we going to talk about today? I don't want to be a Sixers podcast, but we're going to talk about the Sixers. We're going to talk about the new T-Wolves. We're going to get the view from the Orlando side of things and talk to Kevin Clark, who was live on the scene for Sixers Magic last night. We're also going to talk about all this Warriors drama, and I kind of want to get these guys and just sort of take their temperature on some of these quiet storms that are brewing in the NBA, like a couple of teams that are regressing, a couple of teams that maybe playing a little bit above themselves, kind of figure out what's real, what's not. We do that a lot here. Let's start out, though, with last night's Sixers Magic game.
I can't wait.
The debut of Jimmy Butler in a Sixers uniform. He was playing for the Sixers. Just wearing a uniform.
Looks good in the uniform. It's a good color
combination
for him.
Paolo, you're Ricky Henderson here, man. Bat lead off. Tell me what you thought.
He doesn't know who that is.
No, okay, all right. I know who that is. Come on now. Yeah, of course.
Which team did you play for?
The Athletics.
Oh, look at that. Come on.
History buff.
You can't get mad at him because he knows who he is.
Yeah, come on.
I'm applauding
Let
him.
Let me be. All right. So, you know, I thought... It was interesting. I'm just going to start off with this. Justin had a tweet last night.
Oh, this is a great start.
That said, when is somebody going to tell, you know, Ben Simmons that he's the Chris Bosh of this? I think...
I missed that tweet.
Oh, it was a good one.
Yeah,
it was a lot of engagement.
A lot of engagement on that one.
Okay.
But I think watching some of it last night, I kind of get the feeling that the best version of the Sixers team, maybe not at this present moment, but... in the near future, is Jimmy Butler as the Bosh.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say some wild shit, so does anybody want to go ahead of me real quick?
What's that?
Do you have any, like actual takes? Because I'm gonna go off the rails in a second.
I mean, my takes are very vanilla Sixers fans' takes. They're like, what the hell is this team? We have a playmaker who can't shoot, a number one draft pick who doesn't look like a number one draft pick, a center who likes to play from the top of the key, and now, like, and I we're starting Wilson Chandler. So like, it's just, this is a work in progress. I want to hear your takes though, because I feel like I'm going to react more to you.
I feel like in that fourth quarter, it felt like Ben Simmons was a Ferrari with snow tires on, where this team has just moved. And last year they were at their best when they were really kind of assaulting the rim and kind of running as if they like took the lead from Ben. But especially in that fourth quarter, when it got down to crunch time, a time when you would think the Sixers would thrive simply because this is what Jimmy Butler does. Mm-hmm. It seemed like all he would do was bring the ball up the court, initiate the offense, and then just float into a corner.
Ben
did. And he seemed disengaged. He seemed lost. He sort of pretended to rebound at times. And I know they didn't have a lot of practice time. I think they had one.
Sure.
So maybe they figure things out in the future. But really, when it comes down to when you have Butler and Embiid on the court at the same time in those crucial possessions where they can't really run, it seems like he's going to be relegated to like a screener. And so while he was willing to do that at times, I think he looked more like Draymond Green than LeBron James, which is concerning to me.
Yeah.
I think the thing is, like, if you're put yourself in Ben Simmons' shoes, you have this guy who's coming in, obviously very headstrong, obviously has just chewed out the two young guys on the other team he was just in. If you're Ben Simmons, given, even though we know he's an aggressive player, do you not want to at least kind of feel it out in the first game and be like, okay, let me like let this guy kind of have his room to work with here for the most part, and then let me see how I can kind of fit into it. Maybe you say that's wrong and he shouldn't look at it that way, and I kind of agree, because I think in the end, like, it should be Ben leading the break and leading the Sixers offense. I think that's the best version. That's why I say I think Butler is kind of in the best idealized version of the Sixers, will become the boss, because I think he's the one who cuts. He can just right. he can catch and shoot. Like, he has all those skills where if you just lower his usage a little bit, his efficiency will just go off.
And that's the tension there. It's like, does Ben Simmons want to be that player? We were just talking about him last year as if he were like assumed to be the face of the league in like, what, 3 years from mm-hmm. now? And it just seemed like it gave me flashbacks to Jimmy's time with the Wolves. I know it's too soon to say this, but the way they're set up is almost similar, where you have a guy, a big who can shoot and can do all these things, and you really want to take advantage of that. But that other guy, the Wiggins spot, he is the one who has to figure things out. And in order to do that, he has to be willing to do that.
You're using a couple of different templates, which is interesting to hear you talk about it, like in terms of being a Bosch. It's interesting to hear you talk about it in terms of being, he needs to be Draymond. It's interesting to hear you be like, he might be Wiggins. Mm-hmm. It, you know, sometimes I think that the language that we use to describe teams sometimes limits our understanding of them. I'm not saying that's what you're doing in this case, because yeah. I don't think that the early results were particularly inspiring. And I do think that Ben's receded a little bit this season, and especially in this last 10 days where Embiid's looked like an MVP candidate, and Ben just doesn't do enough with the ball out of his hands. He can cut to the rim and dunk, and that's about it. He doesn't space the floor. He can provide a kind of floor spacing, because wherever he is requires attention, because if he gets the ball from that position, he can get to the rim in one dribble, basically. But there's not even the threat of the jumper. Mm-hmm. And I think that you see, like, man, even Fultz looked more comfortable with Butler last night. I mean, mm-hmm. I know Kyle Newbeck from Philly Voice pointed this out. He did, like, an interesting takeaways piece where he also talked about, you know, Butler seemed to make sense with Bede, and he seemed to make sense even with Fultz, mm-hmm. but did not make sense with Simmons.
Yeah,
but I will say this, from everything I know about Ben, he's not Karl Towns, nor is he Andrew Wiggins. Like, I don't think that he's going to just take a backseat to his own career here.
Right. And I guess somebody has to, and yeah. that's going to be the tension to figure out. I guess overall, it seemed to me like Ben has never looked more like a center than he did last night, where he has played in the dunker position yeah. a lot. And but the issue is that Embiid, even though he has guard-like skills, wing-like skills, he'll never be that, because everything is going to move in slow motion and he's going to take up a lot of space. So I just think, like, the pure just like orchestration and the logistics of it seem muddy.
So also, just to be fair, not only are the Sixers bringing in Butler, they're working in, Korkmaz has not been in the rotation mm-hmm. until now. Yeah. Shamit's getting more minutes. They've got Fultz on this, like, his numbers, his minutes, and his specifically, like, which lineups he's playing in change every night. Everybody's lineups change every night. Like, Brown is throwing a lot of different stuff. So Simmons might be the person who's suffering the most because of all this experimentation.
I just think he would, the Sixers team is so interesting, because there is a version of them that are title contenders. Like, just with what they have right now, I think there's a version of them that are title contenders, but I think there has to be so many different sacrifices. Like, Jimmy's got to sacrifice. Simmons has got to, like, at least take a jumper. Like, even just the, like, we talk about this all the time, but even just a threat of, like, being like, hey, this is something he can do now. Even just, like, pull, like, catch the ball and shoot it instead of, like, trying to do something else. I think even that would go such a long way to, like, helping them reach that potential. And, like, and you mentioned Shamit, like, how lucky are they that, like, he can shoot and
this is why I don't want yeah. them trading for some washed up shooter.
Yeah.
Korkmaz and Landry are like, I'd rather have that and not give up anything else for right. Korver or any of these other, like, you see what you can give to the Suns for. I mean, Reese is a little bit more useful than Korver, but, like, I don't want some shooter that's just going to get, like, hunted out of a game in the playoffs.
Yeah, selling low on Markel, if that's the way they're going to do it too, does seem a little weird, simply because, like, I don't know what you're going to get from it at this point.
Yeah.
Also, he looks so much better with the second unit. Like, that's, like, the right place for him, I think.
I guess my overall thought coming away from it, outside of just, like, labeling Ben a bust at this point, is just, in contrast to the Wolves game, which we'll get into, it just seemed like that Wolves team makes so much more sense because they are leaning into two guys as opposed to this big three. I just think in this day and age, it just seems so much more difficult to make a big three work because of all the financial constraints.
Yeah.
And I do wonder, outside of the Warriors, who are the extreme outlier.
We'll get to them.
Yeah, it just seems like it's a little bit easier to find two all-stars, two pillars, and then build around them with shooters and other guys, especially when your two guys aren't really shooters.
So let me ask you this. Have you always been skeptical about Ben Simmons' like overall impact, or are you a little bit more skeptical about it now than you were last season? Because I felt like last season, one of the things that was so great about having Ben with the ball is that he is a devastating transition player. So like if you got out and ran at all, like you basically, it was automatic too, because if you play the ball, Ben's going to make some insane pass to a guy filling the lane. And if you play off the ball, he's just going to destroy you and tomahawk on your face.
Yeah. I think that playoff series just like still has me shook to a large degree. It just seems like we kind of just neglected the fact that like the entire league is based around shooting and spacing the floor. And we just thought because he was getting around that, that he would keep doing it rather than just assuming that like it would come to a head and that would be something he would have to get over. And I just don't know how it works long-term in 2018 with two of those guys.
Sure.
Embiid at best is what, a 35% three-point shooter? So
I mean, he certainly thinks he's a higher shooter than that.
That top of the key at three is like automatic for him now, though.
But it's also, that's like actually like a pretty smart place for him to be in some ways. He's a good passer. It reduces the useless wear and tear of him banging down low when he's not going to get the ball anyway sometimes. I think that there's, I don't mind him at the top of the key as much as I used to. I also think that the two-man games that he can run out there are really fascinating because he can drive and he can get to the hoop. All right, I want to talk a little bit about the other side of the Jimmy Butler trade. That's the Timberwolves, who won last night. But before we do that, let's get some on-the-ground reporting from our Central Florida correspondent, Kevin Clark. All right, now Justin and I are joined by the Ringer's Kissimmee St. Cloud Bureau Chief, the Prince of Central Florida, Kevin Clark. Kevin, you were at this game last night.
It was a top three Magic game of the last 5 years.
Can you name the other two?
The other ones, the Dwight Howard Lakers win in Los Angeles is probably number one. Vooch had a nice game winner against the Lakers a couple of years ago. Oladipo had some nice game winners. And then we also beat the Dwight Howard Rockets around Christmas time a couple of years ago. So most of the wins are Dwight Howard centric.
Okay, so basically, like, your Magic fandom is built around still hating Dwight Howard. But you guys had...
It's not that. It's that nobody gets excited about anything else.
You had the opportunity to see the Sixers firsthand. What was that 21-0 run or whatever it was last night? What was that like to see? Did the Sixers seem mentally weak to you? Did Jimmy Butler start cursing out young children? What happened?
Well, they were definitely... The Sixers were definitely feeling themselves. Like, J.J. Redick, obviously. Just from being around it, I was sitting baseline near the Sixers bench. I think J.J. Redick leads the league in inside jokes with his teammates. Like when he hits threes, he would look at them and like say things and they would laugh. And so that was, and we love J.J. I love J.J. He's a Magic legend. Nothing against him. But
he is a Magic legend. There's like every other way J.J. Redick, Dwight Howard. Who else? Bo Outlaw?
Yeah, Jonathan Isaac. I heard an amazing story about Bo Outlaw playing corporate softball last night. That he's really bad, but he has such long legs that he just legs out base hits all the time.
For what corporation?
The Orlando Magic.
Oh, like I thought ticket. Like Dunder Mifflin. Like he
was like, No. Like they have a ticket.
Is this recent or was this during his heyday?
No, this is recent. Like someone I met last night was like, oh yeah, I played against Bo Outlaw in softball like a couple of weeks ago or something. And he was just legging out base hits like Ichiro or something.
Kevin, how was the atmosphere in the gym?
So there were a couple things. Number one, during that 19-0 run, it got really loud in a way that I didn't anticipate. I mean, I tend to be fairly negative on Orlando crowds when it's not the playoffs. And they got really, really loud. I mean, the Jonathan Isaac block into the Terrence Ross three, which basically was the icing on the cake of that run, was as exciting as anything I can remember, especially in the new building. So the atmosphere was great. I will ask you, Chris, why is there such a low bar for Sixers fans to be impressed with anything Joel Embiid does?
Yeah.
Like he was doing just very basic pivots. And they were like, whoa!
Sixers, well, the thing is, though, there were Sixers fans at that at the Magic game, though. So there was like...
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like the Sixers fans who were around me were just like, whoa, look at that! And it's an extremely basic move. It reminded me of a couple of years ago, I went to Pirlo's debut for NYCFC.
Yeah,
and he was just sort of like doing very basic things. But every time he touched the ball, the entire crowd would go, ooh.
Yeah, all the European soccer snobs came out and just be like, oh, mi amore.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah, he's so smart. It's like jazz. And I kind of feel like the Sixers fans do that a little bit with Embiid, where he's just doing pretty basic stuff and they act like he just invented basketball. I thought that was interesting to watch.
Great take. That's a good take from you, that you think that Jonathan Isaac is better than Joel Embiid. I'll be sure to blast that out to Sixers Reddit.
Isaac and Mo Bamba and Vooch. instead of trading for Jimmy Butler, the Sixers should have traded for a difference maker like Terrence Ross.
Right.
What I'm saying.
They should have traded for a third or fourth center. Yeah, that's the blueprint.
That's right.
In Orlando.
Yeah. How do you feel about being five, like an average team? Do you want to be tanking right now, or are you okay with this team being what it is, which is a Steve Clifford team?
Okay, so it's funny because I went last night with one of my best friends, and then we sat in his corporate, sort of his work seats, and so his coworkers were there as well. So I was talking to them, and nobody in this group was like extremely online or anything like that. And so I was talking about the concept of like maybe being bad again this year and getting a top 10 pick or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're just not, like, they're just pretty normal fans, and they're not on Twitter or anything. And they seemed completely taken, like, just blown away by the fact that I want them to lose. And I kind of feel like, and I might want them to lose. I don't know. But what I'm saying
is you're saying that tanking is like a creation of the mainstream media, and that it hasn't really
kind of
permeated the Sunshine State yet.
I actually kind of think that. But beyond that, I also, like, I think Orlando, they just really want to win. Like, they just want to go to a playoff game and enjoy that atmosphere. Like, they haven't had a lot of moments. I mean, it's getting pretty dire. It's been 6 years since we've done anything relevant. I think that if we can do the 41-41 thing and get the 8 seed and maybe, like, you know, have a nice half against the Raptors or whatever, I think that that's something Orlando needs. And I think that Bamba, Gordon, Isaac, these guys, you can build around them. Maybe you hit on the 16th pick, the 15th pick, whatever it is, 17th pick. I think that I'd prefer that at this point than
to tanking.
Doing the 12th pick, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay, right. Well, when you come back to California, we'll have to have you come in and do an in-depth scouting report of every single Magic player, including guys on their G League.
I'll go. Their G League's in Lakeland, about an hour away. I'll go to some of their games the next 5 nights.
Okay. Yeah, just get some notes down. We'll take a look at them, and we'll just do a kind of like more of like a serial, like real long form
narrative pod.
Yeah,
I was gonna say a narrative pod on the Lakeland Magic.
Hi, I'm Kevin Clark. This is the Lakeland Magic. Okay, Kevin, thank you so much for calling in, man.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks so much to Kevin. Let's talk a little bit about the Timberwolves. If the Sixers raise their ceiling with this Jimmy Butler trade, and you alluded to this, I think it's fair to say that the Wolves drastically raised their basement with this trade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about them. They had 5 starters in double-digit scoring last night in their victory over the Pelicans. Josh Okogie off the bench also went for double digits. And this is what happens when you replace an asshole with Robert Covington. They moved the ball more. This was the highest assist percentage they racked up this season. And they seemed like they were getting in their offense way earlier. Shots were coming way earlier in the shot clock. It wasn't a lot of like plotting. They shot a fair amount of threes. And they looked really, really solid last night.
Yeah, Covington and Saric are just like the good hangs in the NBA. And it just seems like everything just like lifts in spirit as a result of them. And they had that effect on the Sixers, and they're having that effect on the Wolves. And I think not only are they probably like really nice guys, but but also like their game makes things so much easier for everybody around them. So I think it does have a trickle-down effect to where things move a little bit more quickly. You don't have to consider them as much. Rocco is just kind of, you know, be an elite defensive presence and just hit open shots when he has them. There's just like something to be said about low maintenance guys, especially when you have a guy like Towns who, despite everything bad that we said about him, is probably one of the 10 most talented guys in the league?
Easily.
Yeah.
Easily. And is just like auto double-double before you even get into the impact of that double. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like he's going to get the counting stats that are going to keep you in a game.
I think it's interesting to compare Covington. You know, we always talk about how what it would look like for Klay Thompson to be on a different team, to kind of be the first or second option on a different team. And I think, though Covington obviously is not as good as Klay, he was like the fourth, sometimes fifth option on the Sixers. Now he's going to be the second, maybe the third option on the Wolves. I think we're going to see him kind of take, it looked like last night, like he's ready to kind of expand his game a little more, or be much more of a, not just like a leader, but also just like have more production. And he looked so much more comfortable, like not more comfortable, but he looked like he could do more. You know what I'm saying? And I think that him, you know, we might be surprised at how good he might be in this team.
I think. Oh, I mean, I just thought that, I mean, I walked into our office and Megan Schuster, who's a T-Wolves fan, was like, I just was so relieved to be watching basketball free of drama. And then Connor Nevins, who's a new editor over at the site, was talking about how he's a huge college basketball fan. He's like, that's the most aggressive and happy I've seen Wiggins in a really long time last night.
Yep.
And you know, you kind of look at what they did together last night, and Carl was taking a lot of like physical, he was absorbing a lot of punishment and like seemed to be like getting stronger from it, and that had that like I'm feeding off the crowd thing that I don't think he's had in a long time. All those things are kind of intangible old school sports writer bullshit things, but I don't know, I was watching that last night and I was just like, you can tell he's like in this and he sees himself as the hero of this team now.
Yeah, and Wiggins looked like a fun, young, bouncy athlete,
mm-hmm. right.
which is what everything we said about him coming into the league. And if you think about it, he's never really gotten that opportunity on a good team before. Like, he was thrust into the LeBron James drama as soon as he got into the league. Yeah, he probably didn't develop right. And when he first got there, he probably fell into this malaise where he thought he was a star, but probably isn't. But now he's kind of this fifth, just athletic marvel, and he can kind of just bounce around the court simply because you have Covington basically being the adult yep. in the room and taking care of all the things that he no longer has
also,
to take care
and
of.
Also, and not for nothing, Dario is a playmaker from a position that they haven't typically gotten playmaking from. He right. can pass, he can shoot a little bit, although that's been rough this season, but he's multifaceted in a way that I think typically, like, whether it's Taj or Gorgie or whoever they've been kind of running out there to pair at the three or four, is not going to give them.
Yeah. They just have like a crew of like young wings that are really good now. Like
yeah.
I think
there's that, yeah.
And I think that's the reason we might look back and praise them for drafting Okogie, because he's just like an athletic wing who can do a lot of different things and play really hard. And like now you have Saric and Covington who can also do that. And they just kind of, now it's just kind of like, we're just going to throw bodies out there, pick up the pace a little bit. And it's like, what do we got to lose? And it's going to be so much more of a fun aesthetic, league pleasing team too.
And I think the interesting thing is now we're going to come head to head with this new fun Wolves team mm-hmm. and what they used to be under Tibbs.
Yeah, well, and also
Derrick Rose did not play this game.
Yeah,
yeah,
and true. So we wonder. I mean, he had been starting with Teague in the game in between the Butler trade and this one. So I do wonder if he is healthy and available. Like, will Tibbs turn the keys over to him again, and this fun will quickly dissipate, or do we get this and Rose comes off the bench and is more just kind of like,
or
value
is there
added?
Anybody that you could talk into trading for Rose? Or is Rose like, I'm so happy to have a career renaissance or small career renaissance that I'm happy to come off the bench in Minnesota if things are working out.
I mean, I initially read the trade as them turning this over to Rose. Like, I thought that Tibbs would just like lean into
me
that
too.
Identity.
Yeah. Yeah, he was taking like 25 shots the night that they didn't, like whatever the night, the in-between night was that Rose was still playing. I think Rose had the most field goal attempts.
And he has been good. He's been a good scorer. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know if he really jives with what they're doing, because the ball was moving at times.
I'm really interested to see, going back to the Sixers a little bit, like the pace difference for both teams, mm-hmm. because I think the Sixers might slow down a little bit. Ideally, they shouldn't, if like we talked about like Simmons.
Well, that goes against what Brett Brown wants
right,
to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, he wants
and,
to run.
And I think that the Wolves will pick it up a little bit. And I think kind of how those two things fare out will be interesting to keep an eye on for the rest of the season.
All right.
And to Paolo's point, 104.5 is the pace last night in that Pelicans game, which the Pelicans are going to run, but at the same right. time, it looked like the Wolves were getting out there.
Yeah. No, and then even more so, when they even were playing in the half court, I felt like those shots were going up with like 18 seconds, 20 seconds, you know, like 18, 16 seconds left on the clock. So you're getting more looks like that. Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, and we're going to come back and talk about all this Warriors drama. Today's episode of the Ringer NBA Show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. You know what's not smart? Job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. But you know what is smart? ZipRecruiter.com/RingerNBA. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply, so you get qualified candidates fast. No more sorting through the wrong resumes. No more waiting for the right candidates to apply. It's no wonder ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S., and the rating comes from the hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address. It's ZipRecruiter.com/RingerNBA. That's ZipRecruiter.com/RingerNBA. ZipRecruiter.com/RingerNBA. ZipRecruiter. It's the smartest way to hire. You know what's funny about this Warriors story? is it is like the perfect crystallization of why people are obsessed with the NBA. Because everything about it is actually like extremely relatable.
This is the Super Bowl for us.
Well, it's not even like eyeball emoji content stuff, but it's also like, this is how like fights and relationships happen.
Mm. Yeah.
Somebody says something a little aggressive. Then you find out you're fighting about something totally different. Man. And then someone is like, well, I'm leaving. And you're like, you're leaving. Fuck you. I'm leaving. And then like somebody gets fined. You know, my wife.
And then you look back at it and you're like, what were we doing?
Yeah. And then it's just like, if you tell anyone about it, it's like, well, then if you tell somebody about it, then now next time I see them, they're going to know that we had this fight. You know what I mean? Like everything about it is like so real for everybody's lives, aside from the fact that this is probably the best team we've ever seen.
Yeah, there's something comforting about it that for years we've been like, what will take down the Warriors? Is it hubris? Is it is it like the cap mechanics? They
the
won't
disease,
be able to fit
yeah,
in more. Yeah.
Is it just like the way they share the ball? No, it's someone just being a dick.
Yeah.
Someone being a giant dickhead and just calling someone out and saying something that they really should not have.
Yes. So there's a lot of what we think and what we know of this story. And that's what makes it so interesting to talk about. But obviously, unless you've been living under a rock, a couple of nights ago, the Warriors were playing the
Clippers
in Los Angeles, California, where we live.
Game?
And Justin was there. And I'd love to get some firsthand takes on this, because you know, as the game was happening, Bill was just slacking all of us and being like, holy shit, like I think like KD and Draymond are gonna get in a fight,
right?
And I think, you know, generally like people bark on benches at each other typically, not as much as I think that we'd think, but it does happen. Like people get angry at one another. And I think when Bill mentioned that, everybody was like, yeah, who cares? Like, it's just these guys barking at each other. And it just really blew up. And now we do live in a world where, like, there's so much interest in the kind of marginalia of the NBA that nothing can happen on a court or in a stadium or anywhere without people knowing about it and people talking about
especially
it.
Especially if Bill is filming it.
Especially if SG's got the Zapruder camera going.
And shouts to him. I completely missed it. Like, it's funny, the person who was sitting next to me, I guess saw them talking, and he used it as an example as like Draymond and Andre Iguodala still talking to KD about moving the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Little did we know that they were saying that, but they were shouting at him about that.
Yes.
And then it just spilled over from there. I didn't do post game, but like it didn't seem like there was much of a post game.
Yeah, Kevin O'Connor said that KD bolted. And then obviously there's been reports since then that there was like heated conversations in the locker room afterwards. And what it all boils down to is this: there was a play towards the end of regulation, where Draymond Green, I thought, did a very Draymond play, but I could understand why it pissed Kevin Durant off, which was essentially leaped in front of Kevin Durant to grab the ball and take it up the court. And Kevin Durant was calling for the ball and clapping for the ball and saying, give me the ball. And Draymond kind of went for the full head of steam towards the paint. And just got tripped up and time expired and they went to overtime, which the Warriors lost, and Kevin Durant fouled out. When they were waiting for overtime to start again, they got into this altercation. In that altercation, there was apparently Kevin Durant busting Green's chops about not passing him the ball, and then Green flipping out and invoking Kevin Durant's upcoming free agency and the fact that he hasn't really committed to the Warriors, and was basically like, I mean, there's a lot of different, like, who do you believe here? Like, whose account do you believe? But there was a lot of like calling him a bitch and like they were MFing each other. And it was really fascinating to watch Durant's face change over the course of the altercation, because at first you can tell he's just like fucking Draymond. Mm-hmm. And then he's just like, what did you say? And then Draymond is like losing it. Like Draymond will not let it go.
It seems like from the reports of like people in the know and people who like, you know, are with the team or like know the team well, like that. And they're not saying exactly what was said, but they're saying it was far more than what was like what has been like explicitly reported that he said to him. So I think whether we find out what that is, I don't know, but I think it definitely seems like Draymond took it to another level. I think the interesting thing is like everybody seems to think that this is kind of like a burgeoning situation, like this was coming, and that's the most fascinating thing to me, because I think that the free agency angle of this is like cannot be overstated, because it's kind of what LeBron did to the Cavs. Like he was just doing 1+1 deals. And it's like at some point that becomes like, you know, like bothersome to the Cavs, to the team. And I can't even imagine to Draymond. So I like in a weird way, I like sort of understand him reacting this way. Maybe the execution of the
I get what you're saying. Method. I push back slightly against the cracks were there part, because I mean, how many times have you ever been in an argument with a significant other where you walked in the door, you weren't expecting to get in an argument?
Well, this is why I'm single. I don't know. Like, it seems
like, is this something that was under the surface and just needed to be ripped out? The Warriors were fucking busting people up this season. Like, they look like so happy.
I know, but
I
like,
think that they can separate the work, which is the dominating basketball teams on the court, and the like outside of the work, which is like the free agency and the contracts and like money and all that.
Yeah, this just goes back to what we were saying before about it just being like a splintering of personalities rather than any sort of thing that we're used to causing rifts amongst teams. It just seems like Draymond is a really like pissy sort of guy, and like these things were just nagging on him constantly that they have played a certain way, and they invited KD into this like culture that they developed for.
Draymond invited him.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was the one sending those text messages.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, and so it does seem like this divide was always simmering, and KD's free agency and the way that he's handled it is what kind of brought it about. I think it's really interesting to Paolo's point about free agency. I think it's also interesting to look at it from Draymond's perspective. Simply because, yes, Kevin Durant's free agency this summer is going to be a big deal. But as we wrote on the site today, Kevin O'Connor, it does seem like Draymond's free agency 2 years from now is the actual thing that will decide whether this dynasty like takes on to a next phase. And I do wonder from his perspective, the fact that he took on a bargain deal when he signed his max a few years ago in order to potentially create space for Kevin later down the road, whether or not some of the resentment he feels is because of that, because he's going to be 30 2 years from now, and I wonder if he will ever make up that money again.
That's a very, very important point.
Like, it seems like the public, you know, suspension without pay kind of thing. I mean, it's clear cut that they're siding with Durant on, like, the ownership and the coach. They're siding with Durant on this in terms of, like, we clearly want to make sure this one guy knows that we want him. You know what I'm saying?
Which and is like, weird because
it's really weird.
I get it, Durant. Like, you just can't make that up. And not only is he just like a singular talent, but just financially, there's no way for them to get any sort of like even just a league average player to fill his spot.
Oh,
because
yeah,
they're up against the cap and they would have to do it with exceptions. And as we've seen thus far, it's been guys like Nick Young and injured DeMarcus Cousins.
Right.
I just don't know. I think they'll end up losing both of them, I think is the interesting thing from this all. Because if you assume that Kevin Durant is going to leave regardless, which is seems like what is simmering amongst all the reports that have come out as a result, I don't know why you would take the extra step of alienating your second player who, despite all of his offensive woes, is still the best defensive player in the league.
Yeah, and is essentially the competitive spirit of the team. It's the kind of guy who is with a few guys on that team like Clay, Steph, and Kevin, I think they all need someone, if not Draymond, someone like Draymond, someone like Andre Iguodala, who's a little bit more aggressive and a little bit more in your face personality wise. I'm fascinated to watch this going forward. I can't believe how bad it broke so fast. And I guess this is what happens when you have like 20 guys covering the Warriors.
Yeah,
is like this is actually like, what happens to super teams, and what happens with these teams when they make themselves into juggernauts is that the media attention is so fierce, and you've got agents and you've got hangers on and you've got people who are trying to forward their own agenda kind of suggesting different things. One of the most fascinating little details that came out about this was that Draymond was really bugged out about the fact that they were fining him, or at least fining him this much, I think it was. Because he was like, but when I went like flipped out at Steve Kerr in 2016, it was like a 10 grand fine or whatever it was. And it's like, so he's like actually still like, well, the last time I stole the car, you didn't get mad at all. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Like, right. And to that point, like we talk about how, like, why would you alienate Draymond? Like, maybe it's because you're sick of him. Like, maybe that's the answer, you know? And like, he's such a valuable part of the team. And like, I don't know. We can have a discussion of like who is technically more valuable in terms of like who brings more energy. And obviously Durant is one of the two best players in the league. But I think it's interesting to think about the totality of Draymond's Golden State career and like how much that has, you know, maybe created some tension within the franchise that maybe they're just sick of.
Yeah, Draymond's the heart and soul of the team. He has been this entire time. And I just think that regardless of how valuable Kevin Durant is from just a purely objective standpoint, he has always seemed like an outsider. He made this decision in order to kind of rid himself of whatever tension existed between him and Russ. But I think it's interesting to look at him now because he does seem to be the source of tension wherever he goes.
He exists almost outside of any of our learned traditional ways of thinking about things. Like he, by all optic and analytical, you know, ways of looking at basketball, is one of the best two or three basketball players in the league. Yet we don't really even I don't feel like I have a lot of conversations about him being that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always people who are pushing to get into that group or people who are remaining in that group. Steph, LeBron, Harden. Or it's Giannis and Embiid and these guys coming up behind. But it's never like, let's take a second to appreciate Kevin Durant. He got with the rings and he got to play in this harmonious basketball environment where all he wants to do is hoop and start apps. And like that's great. But I feel like he's been taken out of the story of basketball a little bit.
Well, it's also interesting because I don't think he's necessarily a bad guy.
No.
It's
no.
just it, right. like... If anything, it was weird to read some of the reports because everyone knew something was up because Kevin usually lingers in the locker room and I guess like just shoots the shit with everybody. Mm-hmm. He just wants to talk hoops, as we saw with his podcast with Bill. He just really wanted to talk about any basketball subject for 5-hour-long podcasts.
Right.
But it just seems like something about his like moroseness and like this weird thing where like he wants to be validated, but at the same time wants to express that he does not want to be validated, somehow like seeps into the pores of the team. And I think it has shown more this time than it ever did in OKC because we instantly gravitated toward the lightning rod that Russell Westbrook is.
And there's something else that I'll let you get to your point in just a second, Paolo, but there was something else that came up a couple weeks, like about 10 days ago, that I thought was actually a pretty interesting thing to keep in mind as well, which is that Kevin Durant took a tour of the new Warrior Stadium, mm-hmm. which is going to be like this fucking, you know, avatar future tech basketball for the, you know, 22nd century thing. And, you know, they had him walk through it. I think he was the first player who had ever been inside the cordon of like the construction area.
Well, even when they broke ground a few years ago, he was the one at the ceremony.
Yeah,
Steph,
right. I remember that. Yeah.
Because Joe Lacob was a new owner and he inherited Steph. And the reporting from guys on the ground was always that KD was Lacob's guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind is that the Warriors are obviously concerned about this year. They're concerned about what they're going to do this season. But they have a very expensive stadium that is being built for a super team, not for a 7th seed Warriors. Or look, I mean, I think the Warriors with Steph and Clay, and then you have to start talking seriously, like if they were to lose Durant, if Draymond was unhappy, like there's no better place for Anthony Davis in the world than Golden State.
Yeah. Jeez.
You know, but
Gentry would love Draymond. He is the biggest Draymond fan.
Well, be that as it may, I mean, like that would not do wonders for the Pelicans. You know what I mean? Like, I just think it's really important to keep in mind that the Warriors are thinking about long-term investments here, and that's why it's not like, oh, Kevin Durant wants to take off. Screw it. We got the rings out of him, and he got his rings out of us, and now let's move on. Let's go back to Splash Brothers and whatever. What were you going to say?
It is just like fascinating to that point too. Is just how they are very much like, we are the super team and we're going to be a dynasty. But at the same time, to your point, like Joe Lacob's guy is Durant. Like if you're like one of those, like, you know, billionaires, like the things you acquire by your own power, like are things that you're going to value more. And in a way, like, it's just like a weird kind of tension between like one of the best players in the league and one of the best teams in history. And like, where does the, like, what is the priority eventually? And I think we're going to see that shake out, obviously, in the next few months, because it seems like Durant's gone. But at the same time, like, maybe the Warriors think they, if anybody's going to keep him, it's like them. They can still convince him to keep him.
All right. So as we were recording, Draymond decided to talk to the media, the assembled media. They're at getting ready for this Rockets game tonight. Bobby, let's go to some of that audio.
You know, and I've read a lot about how, is this the end of the run or is it over or did I ruin it or did I force Kevin to leave? You know, at the end of the day, as I've said before, whatever Kevin decided to do, whatever Clay decided to do, whatever who decides to do, you know, we had great years together, and I support everybody wholeheartedly, 100%. As a man, as a human being, you got the right to do what you want to do with your life.
Okay, so we're not trying to take things out of context. That was a condensed version of what Draymond said, or at least a snippet of what Draymond said. He was basically like, if you think we were tough to beat before, we're going to be even tougher to beat now. But crucially, he also said, if guys move on and if guys leave, like, I support them. Look, nobody's coming out and just being like, Kevin Durant's staying with the Warriors. And we've like learned from enough summers of endless nights working in July that means Kevin Durant's leaving the Warriors.
Yeah. I think it's,
the question is whether they can play through that.
Like, I commend them for honestly being so upfront about this. Like, they're just like, they talk about this as if it was like something basketball related that is not like that important. But it actually, in the grand scheme of things, it's like, oh yeah, like Kevin Durant might be leaving. Like, they just talk about it so openly that it's almost like cool. Like, I mean, I appreciate it just from like a meaty standpoint, but like, I don't know. I just, it comes back to me to the point that you made earlier where it's like team versus Durant. Like the Warriors, it seems like everybody's bought in. Draymond took less money. Klay took, like, they have cheaper contracts, you know, to be able to fit Kevin in. You know, Curry is obviously this selfless superstar. Durant, it's like his own entity. And I think that is never going to be, they're never going to be a thing together. So there's no like logical conclusion to me that makes sense for them like moving long term forward.
I love this statement. It's just like, it really does crystallize the whole Warriors experience. It's just, this is the line that they walk. Like they might just like almost come to blows. And then like 5 minutes later, they might just put up 30 points in like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
It's just, they just have so much talent on this team. If they just get through this season, they're probably going to win. And now we can let the overarching existentialism of Durant's decision kind of seep into it. But if they can just get through the season, there's no team anywhere close.
No, I mean, like, that was the thing that I think I was grappling with. And thank God for Jimmy Butler, because, you know, for as much as the Bucks and the Raptors came out of the gates so fast, and I was just like, oh, this is really exciting. The East is kind of secretly better than the, like, more exciting to watch than the West on any given night. There were certain rhythms to the season that were developing, like Portland being a good regular season team. And, you know, like, there, here come, and but the one rhythm that was over, was pounding over everything, was just that the Warriors are unbeatable in this configuration. And that almost is like its own existential question, I'm sure, for the guys on the Warriors. It's sure. like you have to have motivation. And you can hear Draymond creating motivation out of this, as if you guys doubted us. You guys thought this was the end. Well, it turns out you're wrong. And no matter what happens next year, no one's going to beat us this year.
Somebody posted a picture like about an hour ago on Twitter. It was KD and Draymond walking into shoot around together.
Oh,
there you go.
That's beautiful.
Adorable. Harmony.
I mean, yeah. And the news cycle does move so quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we were talking about Jimmy Butler on Saturday. We were talking about Melo on Sunday.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about the Warriors on Monday.
Yeah, I know.
So, like, to Draymond's point, I think, like, this can flip very quickly.
Let me just ask you guys, do you think if the Warriors get worked by the Rockets tonight, they're in Houston, Rockets are heating up a little bit, Harden's obviously feeling it. Let's just say they win by, like, 11 or something like that. Does this story get a second life?
Yes, only because they're going to keep being asked about it. And I think that even in the distance, I don't know when Boogie's going to come back. I think he dregs up a lot of questions about how this.
No shit.
Yeah, yeah. You mean he won't be the peacemaker?
Yeah. Well, he was.
He was. Yeah, he was. Yeah, but he's got his own history with Durant, man. Yeah.
I know, but I think just from a purely just like basketball point of view, they won't be able to ignore that part of it, because working him in requires more sacrifices from everybody. And if they're already struggling with it now, I think Boogie has a tendency to exacerbate everything.
I think it'll be a thing until Steph comes back. Because there, I think that...
That's a very good
point. I think the team just... On and off the court, it seems like it takes on a different kind of persona. And
Dad Gene Steph, Steph needs
yeah,
to get
exactly.
back in the mix.
Like, they need their calming presence. And obviously when he's playing and can go off on any given night, it gives him like a different kind of
He's also
almost.
The calming presence in that, like, theoretically, I mean, I know Draymond brings the ball up a lot, but like his presence in that Clippers game changes that Clippers game entirely, you know?
Yeah.
Klay was having to be Klay and Steph that night.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that Steph is on this road trip even though he's not playing.
Yeah, well, he better be. Somebody needs to keep the peace. All right, right before we go, I just want to ask you guys about two trends, a couple of trends, like just streaks that we got going on. I'm going to go through them. You tell me whether or not you think this is the real thing or this is just an aberration. The Spurs have fallen out of the playoff spots and are starting to like slow down a little bit. I think the big conversation before the season was that, could this be the year the Spurs miss the playoffs? Should the Spurs miss the playoffs, you know, for the long-term benefit of the franchise? Have you guys gotten a chance to see them recently? And if so, what are you seeing?
I just think there's like, it's the same thing that's kind of plagued the Raptors in a way with DeRozan, in terms of like how much of a load can he carry, right? And I think that while I think it's going to level out, and personally, I would still say that they'll make it, maybe the 8th seed, but I think that it'll be interesting to see how much like DeRozan can actually handle over the course of an 82-game season.
I think my reason for skepticism coming into the season was that DeRozan, not only is he not Kawhi Leonard on both ends, but he will essentially just mitigate their advantage for the past couple of years, which was on the defensive end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are currently 16th in defensive efficiency, and while they are better on offense that they have been last than last season, I do think if you're going to play at that pace, if you're going to shoot twos, you need to be able to counter on the other end.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about a team that's blossoming right now, and that's the Thunder, who are 9-1 in their last 10.
Paolo Geddes Thunder.
They look dynamite. They actually, I mean, anybody who watches the Thunder is always like, damn, this is the year of Brinas and Ferguson really step up. But it does seem like there was a crucial thing that happened the other night, which was that at the end of a game, I think Paul George was essentially like on like floor generaling the defense and was putting Ferguson like on guys that Paul George would normally guard. He was like doing switches, and he was like, those guys need to learn. Now, there was something really fascinating. I don't know. I just wanted to bring this up in regards to the Thunder, who are doing a very good job beating teams that are worse than them.
Yeah.
And Billy Donovan gave a really, really thoughtful answer to a question about like, how come you guys are beating teams that are, you know, traditionally worse than you this year, when you had so many problems with it over the years. And it's like, especially the Westbrook MVP years, just like, every time it felt like they played the Magic, it was like, what the hell is going on? You know, like,
right. Hey, the Magic are good this year.
Well, the Magic are good this year. But Billy Donovan said that he's talking about how the teams that don't have star power essentially are so active physically and speed wise and are shooting so many threes that that is like the great equalizer, and that that's been a trend over the last couple of years, but it's really crystallized this year. And that the Thunder have just made it their life's mission right now to defend the three. And that if you can defend the three, if you have a talent advantage, the talent advantage will win out. And if you can properly defend against what he calls analytical basketball, which we probably loosely describe as Morey ball, if you can defend that specifically, your talent leverage should win out. And it does seem like so far, on any given night, if they've got Westbrook, George, and Steven Adams, they've got probably three of the best four players on the court. They're winning these games.
I mean, this is why I was so high on the team in the first place. I thought that their defense was going to be really good, and I thought that a second year of Westbrook and George together was going to yield better results.
And free of all this KD shit, like free of all the like, is he staying or is he going, and what do we have to do to impress him?
Exactly. They have stability, so now it's about taking a step forward. Obviously, they didn't get off to that start we expected at the beginning of the season, but I think like a game like last night's makes me a little bit even more frustrated with Paul George, because he has this in him. Like, he had 35, I think he has 35 points. Like, he was a force on both ends. Like, that's the player that, like, he should be on, maybe not every night, but, like, more often than
he doesn't have that.
Well, that's the thing is, like,
he just doesn't have that characteristic. I've been watching Paul George for, like, better part of 10 years. This is, like, tantalizing, and then he'll recede and score 13 and kind of be checked out.
Yeah, but it does seem like the team has leaned into like his identity
in
Russ's absence. And I'm just looking at the defense of like the top of the rankings, and outside of Boston, who has struggled but has maintained a consistent pace here in terms of wins, they're at top. But Oklahoma City follows them, Milwaukee, Memphis. These are three of the biggest teams that have kind of like broken through in this early run. And I think there's something to be said about, to Billy Donovan's point, that if you can control that end, it does feel like there's a way to kind of almost dictate the way things are going. I wrote way too many words about defense, and just one of the most interesting things that came out about it is just so how much it affects the game overall, how much it affects offense. And it seems like a lot of these teams are taking cues from that end. They're dictating pace. Mm-hmm. They're denying transition opportunities. And I just feel like that is winning out in this early going.
Yeah, they're wearing teams out earlier because there's so much running up and down. And it's like March Madness, basically. Like, no lead is safe. The Sixers were up like 12 points with 9 minutes to go. I mean, usually when we were kids, that was usually the game, you can turn the game off, except for like random comebacks. Yeah. Now, pretty much every night, whether the Lakers are winning or losing, I expect a fourth quarter surge from somebody. And it's kind of like spreading across basketball. It's like great for games. But it is kind of like, wow, it must be nuts to coach against this. Because if teams are taking 42 three-pointers a night, no lead is safe.
Right. I mean, it happened last night with the Laker game. I was there, and they were up. The Blazers were up almost 20 points in the early going. And then it completely flipped. Like, now, a lot of that was just LeBron turning it on, which, like, it was an encapsulation of, like, why it's hard to, like, distrust this Laker team, because like LeBron can do that on any night. But it was just so, I mean, that's happened. I mean, you wrote about this, and it's happened with most Laker games. Like, no lead is safe, but also like they have this propensity to like find themselves in some in these games, and maybe that's because
they won't like he won't let them get blown out, but they can't protect any lead.
It is interesting to watch these teams that have such a high octane offense that push the pace, that can rack up 126 now, because you've seen the scores kind of level off. Mm-hmm. Maybe teams are getting used to the emphasis on off ball holding. Maybe it's just like the league kind of settling into a certain rhythm. Maybe teams are getting hurt. I don't know what it is specifically, but it does seem like there is an advantage for a Lakers team that can still put up 130 on everybody. And I wonder what it means going forward. I mean, the Lakers, I didn't watch the entire game, but it seemed like they were clicking in a way that they haven't been in the past. And now I wonder with Rondo out,
they,
at the very least, they make a little bit more sense. They know who they are a little bit more. And so we'll see if Lonzo can kind of step into that
role. We'll also see if Melo's coming to the Lakers. Never know. All right. No show next week. It's Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving to you guys. Happy Thanksgiving to Bobby and all of our listeners. I'm sure when we get back, the league will somehow have changed drastically 4 or 5 times. So we'll have plenty to talk about.
Basketball is very good. Basketball is very good.